Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to welcome you all to this edition of All Sides Weekend. This is the program where we talk about local arts and culture. That's a very lofty way of saying what's really cool happening in town that you can buy tickets to and go and attend. And I have three wonderful arts leaders to spend the hour with us telling us what's going on, beginning with Christy Farnbaugh, who is the executive director of the Contemporary Theater of Ohio. They have a new staging of a play called A Roommate. If you've ever suffered through roommates, this show is for you, that she will tell us about. Rami Wortmeyer is the artistic director of Ballet Met. He is always a welcome, as is everybody, visitor to this program. And there is a wonderful production from Ballet Met opening October 17th at the Rife Center, and it's called three times now, Rami, Rami, Rami. And we will talk about that as our time continues. And the very energetic Julia Newlin-Mera, who probably should be in bed because she's just had a huge run of success with the opera Rappaccini's Daughter 2 weeks ago at the Southern Theater. But Julia is in rehearsal right now. And so as our program today proceeds, we're going to talk about your roommates. We're going to talk about Christmas Carol. We're going to talk about dancing. And we're going to talk about six swimming pools. Julia, go ahead. Knock it out of the ballpark. What about six swimming pools?
Yes, absolutely. So we're very excited to be co-producing with the Wexner Center for the Arts, The Old Man and the Sea. And it also features 16 students from OSU, from the School of Music. So they're going to be in the choir. And it's just this epic tale. It is also about the Ernest Hemingway piece, but it's also in collaboration with Beth Morrison Project. And it's their first time ever doing a production in Ohio. So this is a huge coup for Columbus, and we're really excited to have them. Epic scale, because there are six pools on stage. So if you ever saw the Tom Holland music video where they're like dancing in the water with, you know, the rain, the snow, all that, that is exactly what this production feels like. And we're really excited to be doing
it. I know when Phantom of the Opera came here, they had to rebuild the damn theater to accommodate the sets. I mean, what's going on at Mershon Auditorium with six swimming pools on the stage?
Yes, well, everybody's going to have to wear little rain boots the entire time of tech. So, but we're they're going to do a super good job of actually sealing the stage deck before the pools are laid on stage. So
now, if you are like me, and I'm the only one in the room who is of a certain age, The Old Man and the Sea is, of course, the great novella by Hemingway, and later was a movie with Spencer Tracy. What are you talking about? You're talking about an opera, an old opera, a new opera, what?
Yeah, so part of the attraction to this piece is that it's multidisciplinary. So it's dance, it's video, it's opera, it's projections, it's high fashion. We talk about ecology. And the other thing that's amazing is to actually be presenting a piece by living contemporary artists. So Paola Pristini wrote the piece. She is coming. The entire creative teams are women too, which is really exciting. But it's really taking it, this novella that everyone knows because everybody studies it in school, and taking it just so many steps further. We're really excited about that.
Julia Newlin-Mera is the artistic director of Opera Columbus, and she is bringing a production of The Old Man and the Sea to Mershon Auditorium October 10th and 12th. We're going to come back and talk more about that, and also what's going on with you, what you've been doing, and what's coming up. Christy Farnbaugh, one of the things back in the day, we knew your company as Catco. It was rebranded and renamed, and I love the name, the Contemporary Theater of Ohio. And I asked you this when you were here before, but it's time to ask you again. Expound, if you will, on that title, the Contemporary Theater of Ohio.
Sure. So Catco stood for Contemporary American Theater Company, which you likely know. You've been here in the community a long time. But we found coming out of the pandemic, a lot of people didn't know what Catco stood for. That just became an acronym that didn't have a whole lot of meeting anymore. So we spent a good couple of years figuring out what our purpose and mission was. And along with that came this idea that we should consider changing our name. And we really wanted to put contemporary and theater back in the name so that people, artists, know very clearly what we do. So that was the impetus for it. And the Ohio came about really because we are in the capital of the state. And so we felt like we were going to plant a flag and claim that geographic location for Ohio, for the state. And we think over time, it may get shortened. It gets shortened already to the contemporary. We tend to go by the contemporary or the contemporary theater. People have really reacted really well to that. Not that I don't still say, formerly Catco. Oh, right. Like if you've been in the community a long, long time, you still know Catco.
You say it less, though. You say it less.
I do say it less.
Yeah, we say it over time.
Yeah, sure.
Contemporary Theater of Ohio, when I first heard that, I thought, oh, maybe they're going to tour. Maybe they're going to tour the state. Maybe that's part of the claim.
Someday.
Okay. And was that part of the original impetus behind the idea?
It wasn't really. Okay. No, it was just really about planting our flag, being in the capital of the state.
And contemporary as well is that you are doing pieces, plays, new plays.
Mm-hmm. New plays.
Give me an age range. I mean, you're not doing Tennessee Williams. You may, but something.
Sure. We would do Tennessee Williams in a fresh new way, right? And I can give you an example. The show we just closed was Alice by Heart. It's a new musical. It's set in London in 1941,
right,
during the World War II, right? But it uses Alice in Wonderland as a vehicle to explore a lot of themes, right? We did 9 to 5. That's a 40-year-old show, right? A couple of years ago. But the topics of gender pay equity and sexual harassment in the workplace, and those are all still very real topics. Mm-hmm. A lot of our plays are written in the last 10 years,
right.
So they're pretty relevant. You might remember Wife of a Salesman, right?
That
was a take on the old Arthur Miller Death of a Salesman, but through the lens of if the wife and the mistress had a conversation. How might that go?
You can have him. That's probably how it went. You know, knock yourself out.
Right.
Christy Farnbaugh is the executive director of the Contemporary Theater of Ohio. They are headquartered, I believe, in the Rife Center mm-hmm. downtown, as is my friend Remy Wertmeyer. Of course, you do several different theaters with Ballet Med. Is this your second season with the ballet?
This will be the second season, yeah.
Yes.
My first season, which I programmed. Yeah.
Right. So you have, a showcase of these short dances or
a collection of dances. We call it a triple bill, which is three pieces.
Hence the name Remy. But they're all your work.
They are. Yes. So there is a little point to the name, the name repeat. The first piece is Concerto Mondrian. It was one of my first pieces I created. It's very classical in its aesthetic, classical ballet. Then the second piece is Miroirs. It's a bit more contemporary. And then the last piece is The Rite of Spring, which is a brand new world premiere for the world, I guess, which is completely modern, and it really is. It's working with a local artist called Lance Johnson, who's this graffiti artist. He's this awesome, like, you know, current modern artist, and he does these awesome aesthetics with graffiti art. He's working with our fabric and our costume shop to design all these incredible designs on our costumes.
I don't believe a word of it. I think ballet is people on tutus dancing on point to things nobody understands. Discuss.
Yeah, well, I mean, for sure, you know, there is that stereotype, and it is part of it. We do that.
And it's beautiful.
Yeah, and it is beautiful, and it is magical, and part of this program is to take us from that more classical aesthetic through to like a modern day, what we're doing now, and what we're kind of, how we reflect art, how we reflect it to our community now, and what that is. And with the Rite of Spring, I'm really, we have people dancers in the audience. We have people on the orchestra pit. We have people on the stage. And then even behind the stage, we have these projections and silhouette work. So it's really creating a whole immersive art performance.
It wasn't until about 10 years ago that I got to spend a significant amount of time with Ballet Met, and including backstage and sort of seeing everything up close. I can barely tie my shoes. Forget it. I mean, now, admittedly, I'm 50 years older than most of your dancers, but I looked at them and I said, they were people in their 20s, maybe 30s, And I mean, how do they get there? What yeah, do you I have mean, to do? I'm asking you.
Well, I mean, I started
an
at 2.5 years old.
Yeah,
I started at 2.5 years old. And then you get your first job at around, you know, between 16 and 18. So it is that there's a lot of investment before you even get to the stage. And we have these incredible dancers from all over the world. They really are world class artists and they inspire me every day. And I just I think it's a real privilege to be in the studio with them and the art that we create because of their capacity. It's awesome.
I took my 10-year-old great-niece to see Romeo and Juliet that you did last spring, and she sat there with her mouth open for 2 hours. And it was just and I actually took her backstage to see some of the dancers who could not have been more lovely to her. And that was a great, wonderful.
Well, I think that's also part of it. You know, you have these incredibly gifted dancers who are really hardworking, and to be that good, you have to be humble because every day you have to reassess and push harder and push harder and push harder.
Yes, but do you have pools of water on the stage?
Pools of sweat. Pools
not
of
yet.
Sweat.
Yes, not yet.
Be careful you don't slip there, for goodness sake. All right, Julia, just recap what happened a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yes. So last weekend we were at the Southern Theater and we presented Rappaccini's Daughter, which was also the Columbus premiere of this work by Danielle Catan. It was absolutely stunning. We had Gerardo Encinas do custom couture designs on stage for the outfits. And also, it was the directing debut from our Crane directing fellow, Brendan Shaw McKnight. So it was just like a stunning, huge celebration. And I have to say, the other thing that I loved about it too is through our collaboration on West Side Story, a lot of the Ballet Met dancers came to see the show. So that was really fun that they're all cheering each other on in that respect too. So we were on stage with the Columbus Symphony and it was a 5-piece orchestra and it was just absolutely stunning. Andrea Catan came to see the show. By a Mexican composer, thank you. It was actually the first piece ever done by a Mexican composer in the United States. And Andrea Catan came, and she was so blown away by the production, she wants to take it to California. So
this was based on a short story in English by Nathaniel Hawthorne from 1840 that was written to set to music by a Mexican composer to a Spanish text 30 years ago.
Yes.
Where do you find these people? No, it was interesting because if you were, and this is true for what you two do, what Christy and Remy do, more than it is for the opera, but people who came to see your production, we were all seeing this piece for the first time. None of us had ever seen this because it hadn't been done enough yet. Now I think that might change given the success of what you had there.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break and come back and have more of my conversation with the good folks from Opera Columbus, Ballet Met, and the Contemporary Theater of Ohio. Don't go away.
Rare to find a podcast that can actually change your life. But when the show's called Life Kit, that's kind of the whole point. I'm Mariel Segarra. 3 times a week on the Life Kit podcast, we guide you through a topic we could all use help with, from personal development to healthy living to managing your dinero, with takeaways so you can start living what you learn right away. Escucha el Life Kit podcast from NPR.
We are back with All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy talking about the very rich artistic and cultural life here in Central Ohio and in Columbus with Christy Farnbaugh, who is the executive director of the Contemporary Theater of Ohio, with Remy Whitmire, who is the artistic director of Ballet Met, and with Julia Newland-Mera, who is the artistic director of Opera Columbus. And I'm the only person in the room who's not a director, artistic or otherwise, but I get paid to yak, so here I am. So, Christy Farnbaugh, one thing I wanted to ask you, as somebody who runs the Contemporary Theater of Ohio, what to you makes a good play? What are you reading? You said the audience is going to love this. I'm sitting at my desk with a script.
Yeah, we really want people to feel something when they come to our plays. Maybe see an issue from a different perspective. build empathy for sure. That's in our mission, right? Create empathy. And what we're also really good at is making space, creating safe space for people to have conversations around those issues. So we talk a lot about taking care of the audience, right? If we talk about an issue, for example, wife of a salesman, there was an issue, there was a scene at the very end around abortion, right? And so how do you create that space then? So you don't just turn people out into the world like, well, what do I do with that? How would I process that? Mm-hmm. So we build in talkbacks and community conversations and work with community partners. And so that's really a hallmark of our work, is that we talk about very real, current, relevant issues and help people have a way to process, you know, those feelings and those emotions. And I just think that's what the arts do. You sort of come as you are and leave different, hopefully, because you've experienced something in a different way or seen it in a different light.
Tell me about the show you have coming up, The Roommate.
The Roommate is hilarious.
Let's just laugh. Good.
From the word go, you're going to laugh, right? It is a story. We have two seasoned, wonderful veteran actors from Columbus, Janine Thompson and Michelle Lowry Schroeder, in the play. And Janine plays a woman from the middle of Iowa, divorcee, who finds herself that she needs a roommate. It's hard times, right? She needs a roommate. And so she puts an ad in the paper, and she chooses a woman from Brooklyn, who moves to Iowa and settles in. And from there, like, hilarity ensues, right? And they're pretty different. The roommate's a little younger, and you might sort of learn, I won't give too much away, but she's kind of a con artist.
Is Brooklyn moving into Iowa's
Brooklyn
house?
Brooklyn is moving into Iowa, correct.
To Iowa's house, so she's
correct.
Okay, wow.
Yes, right. That's right. And so then hilarity ensues, and they have lots of shenanigans. Again, I don't want to give too much away, but it's 90 minutes. All of our shows this season actually are 90 minutes. And so in a short romp through what is it like to have a roommate? I think we've all had those experiences, right? Good, bad, otherwise. How do you navigate that? How do you navigate the feelings? And we wanted to do the show a year ago, and we were waiting on the rights. And it was announced that it was going to Broadway with Patti LuPone and Mia Farrow.
Oh, this is that one.
So we had to wait a year. So it's really just fresh from its Broadway run with those two amazing actors.
Did you see it then? Did you go see it with them?
Or? We did. I did not see it.
Okay.
But anyway, we've been waiting a couple of years to do it.
And what's fascinating to me about you personally is that you have had quite a varied career in arts administration in the state of Ohio. You've been on both sides of the desk when you've asked for money, and you've given grants. You've done both.
I have.
What's more fun?
You know, I enjoy it both, right? I want it. Actually, I was at the Ohio Arts Council, very young in my career. I started there when I was 24 and was there for a total of 15 years, a couple different stints, a couple different times. I moved my way up through, and I wish I could go back and do that again, because I know more now on this side of the table. And I really wanted to, after a few years of being a grant maker and supporting organizations across the state, to roll up my sleeves and put theory into practice. That was one of the reasons I made the shift years ago. And what you learn is some of it works and some of it doesn't. And it's all about experimentation and improvisation and right. But in either case, you are making a difference in people's lives, whether you're on that side with funding or this side with, you know, producing. That's really, for me, the through line in all of it is making a difference in people's lives. And I have believed since I was a music major at Otterbein that the arts matter in communities deeply.
Well, I think this has probably happened to each of you. It's happened to me where you are either in the audience or you're looking around and you see somebody sitting there and the lights go on. Mm. And they may be a child, mm-hmm. maybe not a child, and the lights all of a sudden go on and they hadn't been on before in that way. Mm-hmm. And that happens because they're sitting watching the ballet or the theater or the opera. And that I think that's a big responsibility, too, to you know, when that happens.
Yeah. So. Well, and I believe, and have some data to prove it over the years, that I call that a personally meaningful arts experience. Yeah. And that child or that person will tell that story for years to come. Yeah. We all have them, right? And I think in this seat, what I love about is always opening night. To your point, we don't have an actual curtain in our space, but when the lights come up and the show begins, I get that tingle every single time. That's why we do what we do.
I'm a lot older than all of you, and I still get that too. So that doesn't go away. Yeah. Let me just tell you right now, that never goes away. Remy Wertmeyer, Ballet Met. Now, you've been here for a couple of years. The last time you were here, I think you were still living out of a suitcase in an Airbnb. You just got
pretty
here.
Pretty much, yeah. I just bought a house. So.
Okay, so... Yeah. So a year later, what are you finding in this community, in this city, both for the ballet and for not?
Yeah, well, I mean, what you were talking about new creation, I think that's so exciting about Columbus. You know, these three organizations in particular, we're creating and pushing the boundaries of art. Now, I think that is so exciting for our audiences and our community in general, because like you say, you create those moments of moving people to think differently. That's what growth is, and that's what art has the opportunity to do. It has the opportunity to unite a community. And I think especially in these times, it's really wonderful that we provide that space where people from all different places, all different trains of thought, come together to experience the same thing and feel growth from that and unity. I think that's really exciting. So that's a wonderful part of coming to Columbus and seeing that happen, new art being created here and what that does to the community. As far as outside of the community, I still don't have a license, as I know Julia also doesn't. So we're both kind of, you know, we're both pushing back on the whole car thing, having come from cities where there's, you know, maybe a slightly more advanced public.
I've been here 30 years and I still hate driving. I would crash it into a wall if I could, because I too came from a city where nobody drove. I mean, that's it. Yeah.
So I'm trying to get the motivation or the you know, the time.
Do you have a license?
I don't have the license, but I have a car.
Okay. All right. Well, okay.
And my dad was he's a race car driver. He's a race car and everything. So, yeah, my brother was a motor mechanic. So there's really no excuse at this point.
Can you walk to work?
It's an hour and a half, so it's not ideal. Well, I have a bike, but but that's also 35 minutes and kind of exhausting before a big day of dancing.
Talk a little bit more about the program in October at the Rife Center, the three dances, and then... Let's talk about, you're doing Peter Pan. I don't know a ballet of Peter Pan.
Well, there you go. You got to come see. Well, then
I
you'll
do.
Know
yes,
one.
Yes.
I'm really excited about this triple bill. Like I say, the first piece was created, one of my very first ballets. It was created in Spain. And then the second piece is Miroirs. That was created a couple of years ago. That was created in Queensland. So I've got these pieces from around the world that I'm bringing here. And then the Rite of Spring. I don't know if you know much about the Rite of Spring, but it's the Stravinsky music, the Rite of Spring, that Ballet Russe, that Ballet Russe premiered in 1913 in Paris.
To riots. They almost
exactly.
burned down the Théâtre Châtelet
they
in
did.
Paris.
They
yes.
did, yes. And they pulled out hatpins out of their people around them and stabbed each other with them and threw things.
Diaghilev sat there going, ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching.
100%. And now, so that actually, you know, to that point, we actually... have been inspired by those riots, by that rebellion, that kind of emotional reaction that was formed in the audience that night. And we do have two different groups of people represented on stage, and you have the rebels and you have the programmers. And it's a little bit about like...
You've rewritten a libretto.
I've totally rewritten it. It's got, you know, Matrix vibes. It's got that kind of idea.
All right, that's great.
It's got this kind of energy. And, you know, there is someone who's been kind of captured. And it's all about the rebels wanting to get that person back because the programmers are programming and coding that person to become... one of many rather than an individual human being. So I think, you know, that whole idea about AI and just our worlds in general becoming very, very uniformed and us as artists rebelling against that and individual creative thought.
Do you know what, as I'm listening to the three of you, I'm thinking none of you are working in a museum. You know, you're not considering, and we love museums, don't get me wrong, I'm not having that conversation, but I'm saying you're creating new things or new way to look a new way to look at something. The Rite of Spring is over 100 years old, and you're redoing it. You're bringing operas that were written 2 weeks ago, and
some 300 years
and
ago.
and one 300 years ago as well, just for some balance. But none of you are living in a museum. Is that deliberate? Is that a real part of your mandate that we are really going to come to the audience with a fresh perspective?
So here's my philosophy. When you used to go to the opera 400 years ago, you were surrounded by artwork from your contemporaries.
Right.
And
100%.
That's why I'm so excited to be doing this piece actually at the WEX, because they are surrounded by their contemporaries. Mm-hmm. So to be able to experience All Men and the Sea and to, you know, there's a whole pre-show experience where you get to go into the museum, experience that art. There is also, we love interactive elements, so there's also going to be a Cuban band in the lobby, and we have a lot of activities that we're doing. But for us, that it's, you talk about immersive, but that's it. It's like, what's your well-rounded evening? But I also think museums are doing a great job not just staying in their four walls either. I think everybody wants to start moving.
100%.
So, yeah.
I mean, I think that ballet has that kind of stereotype of being a museum art form, of being something old-fashioned.
Opera certainly did,
yeah. And I think that that's simply not true now, especially not in Columbus. What we're doing is very current and exciting.
That's interesting because, you know, I don't get around much anymore, but one thing I've noticed in this town in the last 10 years at least is that there's a lot of risk-taking in programming. And the classics, there's always a home for them being, the symphony is certainly true. They're doing an all Beethoven weekend. It's going to be magnificent. But they are also doing stuff that was written 3 weeks ago. Pro Musica makes it their mandate to do stuff like that, brand new music. And new music's hard. That's a really hard sell. You have to do it often and really weave it into your mission statement and get your audience to trust you. Audience trust is also hard. Do you find it difficult to get the audience to trust you?
You have to build that trust.
How?
So by, you know, making sure that it's high quality, that they understand you're taking care of them. So once you build that trust, I think they're willing to follow you. I mean, that's some of the reactions we were getting next year. They're like, Julia, we don't know three of the pieces you're presenting
next
year.
Well, I have to tell you something, because you sat in that chair a few months ago off mic and told me what you were going to be doing.
Yeah.
I've been around a long time. I mean, I knew Puccini, all right?
Yeah,
get out
of
here.
Oh, good.
So, and I'm thinking, I went home and said to my wife, what is this dame talking about? I mean, I've never heard of any of these things. But then I went to see it. And, you know, we fell in love.
Yeah.
We did. No, we fell in love.
It's very important. So I think building that trust is extremely important. And also what's exciting to me is how much the art form is becoming more and more accessible. And by accessible, I don't mean just ticket pricing, but also like how are we opening our doors to everyone and what that experience is like. So to me, that's also a huge part of it. But one of the things we've learned in opera is our subscribers and our patrons, they love a good theme. So last year it was Love is a Battlefield. And this year is From Page to Stage, Stories and Music. So it's all books turned into operas.
Like Hawthorne, like Hemingway, like Dumas,
for Traviata later.
What's The Anonymous Lover?
So Anonymous Lover was actually written at the same time as Marriage of Figaro. So if you love that piece, that's great.
We're talking 1780s.
1780s, Le Chevalier. You know, it's a rom-com. You know, we like to say it's almost like a soap opera on stage. Just like Figaro, it's like a comedy of, you know, doors and errors. And the music is just gorgeous. He is the first known black opera composer in the history books. And what we're trying to do is like bring it back to like, why isn't it one of the top five most produced operas? It's absolutely gorgeous music. So we're really thrilled to be presenting his work. And it's Ken Overton's directing debut. And it's going to be at the Palace Theater. But it's been really fun to be in the creative room with them and to see all the ideas they come up with it. So it'll feel like period drama, which I know also we have our diehard opera fans. We're like, give me a good period dress. So
they want to see. They want to. Well, they want to see powdered wigs. They want to see costumes.
They want to see everything, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And to us, and also, you know, when I'm presenting these things to the board, it's talking about we will have an audience for every show. It doesn't have to be the same audience for all of them. We have patrons that come only to our free events, so that's also very important to us.
the Wexner Center, which is your home for The Old Man and the Sea, October 10th and 12th, I believe has a distinct and separate audience. So you're tapping into, I think, unless I'm wrong, but I think they probably do.
Yes, and we're excited about that. It's just bringing everyone together to experience it. And I have to say, Gaetan Werner, who runs the Wex, is doing a phenomenal job. And she loves art. Like she
loves all the arts. Yes.
Yeah, I see her at all our shows. We go to all their presentations as well. And so, like, it was such a labor of love to come up with this piece together. When I saw Beth Morrison pitch it as, "Hey, this is something that we're putting together," you know, Gaetan and I got very fired up about it, and we're like, "Oh, this is the collab we want," because it really touches on everything. It's multidisciplinary. It's opera. It's in English. It's 90 minutes. It hits a lot of things that we're
excited. It's a story that a lot of people also are at least the bare bones of it are familiar with, which
absolutely.
I think makes a big difference. Yeah. Christy Fonbaugh, I wanted to ask you one thing. Have you ever involved yourself with a playwright? I'm wondering if you've sat next to a playwright and this person is writing something, maybe with an eye toward a production with you, and what kind of feedback? What is that conversation like?
You know, it depends on the playwright and where they are in the world. If they're like, I would use Chris Leva as an example, a local playwright here in Columbus. And Chris, when we did his piece early on, Lita in my 10 years here, he was in the rehearsal room and kind of rewriting in the moment. Oh, that, you know, something, you know, plays have been rehearsed and tweaked and rewritten many, many times before you see them on the stage. And he could do that work real time with actors. Like, oh, that line didn't land the way I thought it would, or I want to switch. It's probably just like an opera or dance. You change things up based on how it
goes. So he'd probably change a few things after a few performances when he sees the audience or she sees the audience's reaction.
Well, it depends. Because we're a professional company, when the show opens on Saturday night, there's no more changes. Okay. So the directors, and they can work through it on the, you know, on the preview nights. I don't know if a playwright would go that far into the play without making the changes, right? Because you've done final dress and all that. Yeah. But for us, Saturday night, the director is done. In fact, if it's an out-of-town director, they leave town.
Right. Well, you give it to the audience at that point.
We give it to the audience, and the stage manager runs the show every night.
Runs the show, Okay. Ramey, I'm curious also, I love talking to artists about process, about how you work. When you do a triple bill and it's your own work, first of all, what is the amount of time from rehearsal hall to October 17th, which is opening night? And what is the process? What do you do?
So when we're talking about scheduling, we have like about 4 to 5 weeks of rehearsals before each program. So that's when we have the dancers in the studio. But before that, I've spent months calculating exactly what's happening when. I mean, I keep things very loose in the sense of the actual steps because I want to be inspired by the dancers and they motivate you and inspire you to do much more interesting things and take the body into shapes that you didn't know were possible. But I like to develop a skeleton. So I go away, I learn the music very, very thoroughly. I go like second to second thinking, okay, this is at least when I want that entrance to happen from that character. This is when I want four dancers coming forward. This is when I want a pas de deux. This is just to know that then the ups and downs of the piece make sense and keep the audience engaged.
I know there's a score. Is there a bona fide script, like with words that you would work from?
Well, there isn't one that exists before, but what I do make one of those. Mm-hmm. So when you look at like the piece that I'm creating for the end of the last program, which is La Boheme, I've gone away. It's going to be set in New Orleans in the 1920s, in the Bohemian New Orleans of that time. There is the Mardi Gras scene and all those fun things, and the different, you know, Rodolfo and Musetta and Mimi and Marcello. They're all the same kind of characters, but they're set in this world where they're creating sets and designs for La Boheme, for the Mardi Gras. And then there is a hurricane. There are things like this. So it's very poignant to the area. So I had to go away and do a huge amount of research for that. That was months and months. I mean, almost the whole of last year was researching, when there was time, of course, this production, and going through and looking at the music, looking at the score, how to reduce that opera into a ballet score, who, you know, working with Kevin Hocking's it's not really a reduction, actually, because he's added more musicians in order to make up for the vocal line. So that had to be changed. We had to add in more strings.
La Bohème is an opera, but you're doing it without the singers.
Exactly.
That's
fine. Exactly.
That's precedent for all kinds of things.
The bodies will be singing. The dancers' bodies will be singing.
We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk a little bit more with our guests. Don't go away.
Rare to find a podcast that can actually change your life. But when the show's called Life Kit, that's kind of the whole point. I'm Mariel Segarra. 3 times a week on the Life Kit podcast, we guide you through a topic we could all use help with, from personal development to healthy living to managing your dinero, with takeaways so you can start living what you learn right away. Escucha el Life Kit podcast from NPR.
We are back. We are talking arts and culture in Central Ohio. I'm Christopher Purdy, and this is All Sides Weekend, and we're talking with Rami Wertmeyer, who is the artistic director of Ballet Met, with Christy Farnbaugh, who is the executive director, I want to get my directors right, of the Contemporary Theater of Ohio, and with Julian Newland Mera, who is the artistic director of Opera Columbus. Real fast, Julia is doing The Old Man and the Sea at Mershon Auditorium at the Wexner Center, October 10th and 12th. Rami Wertmeyer is doing his next project, and there are many for both of them, is a triple bill of dances at the Rife Center opening October 17th, including The Rite of Spring in a very new take. And Christy Farnbaugh at the Contemporary Theater of Ohio has a very funny, somewhat naughty show called The Roommate opening up. And then you're doing A Christmas Carol. You're bringing that back. That was a big hit. Yeah. And when you think of that, you think of Scrooge and children and snow and everything. And this is a one-person show that worked on every level. Talk about The Christmas
Carol. Yeah, correct. And I was thinking about our conversation about old work and new work, right?
Yeah,
Dickens,
yeah.
This is a very old show. Angela Iannone is a force, tour de force actor, and this will be the third year that we're doing this.
She's a small woman, and she could beat you up.
She is mighty.
Yeah, yes.
She's mighty.
Yeah.
And you will see all 30 characters in about 70 minutes from The Christmas Carol. She really tells the story the way Dickens used to. So Dickens would get on a train and go from city to city. Fun fact, there was a hotel where the Huntington Building is back in those days, and he stayed at that hotel, so right next door to the theater. Jump off the train, come in and give a few performances, and back on the train he went. And so that's kind of where the story starts, that Dickens has come to town, and he has lost his script. And so he's kind of searching, you know, where is anybody have a copy? And no one does. And so from there, Angela will tell that story, one woman, 70 minutes, 30 characters, with minimal set, beautiful lighting, minimal props. It's all, she does it all with her body and her voice and facial expressions. And yeah, audiences love it. I describe it as Angela Dickens telling you a bedtime story. Like, it's that intimate.
Yeah, but you won't sleep, though.
You won't sleep. You will not sleep, but you'll be ready to go home and realize, you know, it's 100 seats. It's very intimate. You're very close to the action. So, like all of our work, but this one is particularly intimate.
Whose idea was it to do it with one person? I saw it, and I thought I was riveted by it. I'm going to come see it again, but whose idea was it to do it with one person?
Yeah.
Dickens, yes, but he's been dead for 300 years.
Sure, and this is a script that is written. It's been written many years ago, and Angela knew about the script. And what you may not know is that Lita Hoffman, our artistic director, moved here in August of 2020 from Chicago for this job. And literally a week later, Angela Iannone, who she knew from her days in Milwaukee, revealed on Facebook she was also moving back to Columbus, where she's from, during the pandemic. And so the two of them were like, hey, wait, hang on a second. You're going to be in Columbus, too. And so the idea sort of built and came about from there. This year, Angela is at the American Shakespeare Center in Staunton, Virginia for a lot of the year doing her work. And so this year it's a little bit of a co-pro. Lita will go there, rehearse the play, do a weekend of performances, and then bring it here.
I believe Angela played Maria Callas here in Columbus when they did Masterclass number of years ago. Okay. I think that's who that was, yes. Yeah. And whoever that was, she was very powerful in that as well.
Yeah,
so
she's,
you can spend the holidays at the Contemporary Theater of Ohio. You could see Pools of Water and a great new... By the way, Julia, you have mentioned somebody who... I know who she is, but I want people to know who she is. Who is Beth Morrison?
Oh, yes. Well, first, she is a fellow Boston University student,
which we both are. Except I was there before either of you were born, but okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
But she's a tour de force woman is what I'm going to call her. She's a brilliant producer, and she has this incredible talent of bringing librettists and composers and emerging directors
into creating new work.
Oh, yeah. She's incredible. And she produces all over the country, a lot at Los Angeles Opera, actually. We're just really thrilled that this happened to all work out, and she was excited to do it here too.
Okay, every time you come on the show, I say the same thing. I'm going to say it now, and that is that. Okay, she's talking about opera. That's a bunch of rather heavy people, not very attractive, standing there and screaming at each other. And why would I spend money to see or hear that? Now, discuss, because that is the antithesis of what you do.
Yes. We are incredibly sexy company is what I'm going to say. We also have one of the youngest audiences in the country. We're in the top three, which I'm very proud of. And that's happened over the past 5 years. We worked really hard. So we really have cross generations attending our
shows.
She
doesn't want me to come. That's why she says that.
That's not true.
You walk in there with white beard.
All is
with
welcome.
The white beard. And they put me in the back row. Don't be in the light.
All are welcome. But it's very exciting to see that it's cross-generation. Because, like you say, you usually expect a Valkyrie woman, and that's it. So I'm very proud of that. And I think, again, it's by making it exciting and inviting. And, you know, in a lot of other places, it's you wear your tux to the opera. You can wear your tux to the opera, but you can also wear your PJs.
Right.
And that's great.
I've seen both.
Yes, you have.
I have. I've seen both, yes.
You've seen people also in costumes in the audience.
You also spend a lot of time out in the community. You go to parades. You go to festivals. You bring singers I know you've gone to care homes and things like that in hospitals.
Yeah. We were just in the Hispanic Heritage Parade with Kappa. That was really fun, too. Yeah. So, I alluded a little bit to it, but on November 6th, we have another event called Artist Roadmap. And so we invite local artists to join us. And it's anything from getting free headshots. We talk about, you know, how to build your resume, financial stability. And at the end of the night, we have something called All-Star Masterclass, which are seasoned opera singers. But I also want people to understand that you can be an opera singer, but also be a realtor or a kindergarten teacher. And so they have a masterclass with Dr. Everett McCorvey, who's our principal guest conductor. And all of that is free and very exciting, and it's at the Ohio Theater.
That's all on your website. Very
it
good
is,
website.
Yes.
What's the address of the website?
OperaColumbus.org.
Okay, check it out. Remy, the other thing I wanted to ask you about is your school, because all ballet companies, or most of them, have schools attached to them, because one starts to be a dancer when you're four or 5 years old. So tell me about the school.
Yeah, we have a very large academy, the Ballet Net Academy, and it is wonderful. It's in our building also. It shares our studios. We also get out in the community. We have performances in schools, but we also have classes out in different locations around Columbus area, the Franklin area. And what is wonderful, what I'm really proud of, is to see the through line. So we have some of our students from the very beginning took their first class with Ballet Met Academy. They got into the Ballet Met trainee program, which is the pre-graduate levels kind of thing. And then you go into Ballet Met 2, which is our junior company, and then the main company. And now we have people dancing in our main company who have taken that whole journey.
Ballet Met 2, I guess not the minor league, but the younger, the students.
Yeah, it's
how old are you when you're in that company?
So for that company, you range between 16 to 22, let's say, kind of thing. And it's usually a two-year position. and before moving on to a professional company, which can be our company, but also we export talent all around the world. We have principal dancers literally all around the world, which makes us very proud. We have people in Europe. We have people in other parts of America. It's having a great effect on the ballet world in general.
How many dancers do you have in the professional company now?
28.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you take class every day?
We do.
What does that mean, when take class? I feel so important. I just take
class. We do our ballet class in the morning.
So everybody shows up in a leotard.
Or, well, I mean, they don't have to wear a leotard, but they, you know, whatever they want. They have their own autonomy over that. And we do provide a ballet class every morning. It's an hour and a half class. It goes from 9:15 until 10:45, and then we have a 15-minute break, and then we start our actual official work day at 11 until 6 p.m.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a
it's
full
a lot.
Day.
Yeah, they work hard. They're athletes.
When you're losing, when you're literally using your limbs and your and everything else.
Yeah.
Do you when you are a professional ballet dancer, do you have to keep doing that to keep the
Well, not only that, actually, we say you start at 9:15 with ballet class, but you actually start an hour earlier with like your Pilates workout and your you know, we have physical trainers who teach us exercises to keep our bodies moving. That's why I was able to dance until 38. You know, some dancers dance older than that. Some dancers, you know, don't make it that long. That's the industry, unfortunately. But yeah, you do your ballet class, you do your pre-ballet class, which is the Pilates, and then often after work, you'll go to the gym and you'll do strength training. Yeah, it's a commitment.
You've got to be kidding.
That's why it has to be a labor of love, for sure. It's not you can't be half in. You have to be all in.
And rehearsals and performances and everything. Well, I told you earlier when I saw the company up close, like literally in the wings, it struck me they never stop.
No.
Well,
your body goes cold. I mean, it's a little bit like the voice. The voice gets cold. You have to keep it going.
I was going to ask you. I mean, could you or anybody just go for 2 weeks and say, it's July. I'm not doing this. I'm going on vacation.
Well, we do. I mean, they do take the summer break, and it is advised to take a break at least at the very beginning of that. Take a real like detox from ballet kind of break. Get your body back to zero, and then you have to work forward. You have to work forward and work. That takes time.
It's very much athletics what you do. How do you cope with injury?
Yeah, I mean, it's part of it, isn't it? The unfortunate truth is it's part of it, but I do, I do hope that, and I do encourage our dancers to do a lot of pre-work in order to maintain a high physical athletic condition, because you can't just get into rehearsal, just like singing. You know, you don't just jump in the studio and belt out the highest notes. You have to condition and strengthen and work and work and work to provide a baseline so that you can jump off of that in rehearsals.
That's one thing that I've always thought. You wouldn't be an actor or a dancer or a singer unless you had to do it, because it's too hard. I mean, unless you really, the commitment of your life. And I would think that if you're going to have a romantic partner, they better be in the same profession, because nobody else would get
it. Or a total opposite.
I mean,
former is great.
Marry a fire chief or something,
exactly,
you know, and just
exactly.
Right, somebody who didn't get it. Well, in the few minutes I have left, I want to make sure that everybody really understands what's going on, beginning with Opera Columbus. What's happening October 10th and 12th, Julia?
We are presenting The Old Men and the Sea with the Wexner Center for the Arts at Mershon.
And that is based on Hemingway's book.
Yes.
Who wrote the music?
Paolo Prestini.
Who wrote the words? Besides Hemingway, he's
Rose Vivarek.
Okay. And you have a wonderful soprano, I believe, Mayasha Brugger-Grossman, who's in it. She's been here before.
Phenomenal.
She's been, and she's magnificent.
Yes.
So I look forward to that. That's in Mershon Auditorium.
Yes.
Okay. OperaColumbus.org.
And show up early for all the pre-show experiences.
Are you going to go swimming or something?
No. That's the one thing you're not going to do.
So one of your shows, you had a bourbon bar. So that was very popular.
We do say the front row is a splash zone, though.
Really? Is a splash zone? I mean, you're welcome to sit there, but you're going to get wet. Okay.
Yes.
That might be fun, actually.
Fun.
Okay. And Christy at the Contemporary Theater of Ohio. Just quickly, what the next two shows coming up?
Yeah, The Roommate opens October 30th. Yeah, is that right? Yeah, October 30th at the Rife Center, Studio 2. That's a play written by Jen Silverman, who's a very important and up-and-coming playwright in the world, has written several pieces, so we're super excited about that. And then in December, for 2 weeks leading up to Christmas, we'll do the one-person version of A Christmas Carol with Angela Iannone.
And that's at Kekko. And Remy, real fast, you have La Boheme.
We have Love One at the end of the year, yeah. But the one coming up right now is Remy.
Which is, so, you said so, it, not so, I. Okay.
So come see what your new artistic director's about.
That's fantastic. No, yeah. People should do that because this is really your introduction to the community as really your own season. And I think it's very important to be there. And that opens on October 27th.
October 17th.
17th. And runs through the 25th. Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so, we also have concert pianist in that one. Yes. Mariko Canadone. Okay. So, yeah, come see that.
That's everybody at Ballet Met. And that is all the time we have today. And I want to thank everybody. Christy Farnbaugh, thank you. The executive director of the Contemporary Theater of Ohio. What's your website?
TheContemporaryOhio.org.
Very good. And
BalletMet.org.
Remy Whitmire, the artistic director of Ballet Met, who now bought a house, which means he's going to stick around for a while, which is great. And Julia Newland Mera, who is leaving here to go install swimming pools in the Wexner Center for her new production of The Old Man and the Sea. I'm Christopher Purdy. My thanks to Chris Johnson for making it possible for us to do radio, and to our producer, Marcus Charleston. And my thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News.